Hey folks, welcome to this week's podcast, special Spompanato Brothers edition. We start with Johnny Spompanato, recorded last week, March 2013. He talks about the new Spompanato Brothers record, their second record, and plays a few cuts from it for the first time anywhere. And then we go to two interviews with Joey Spompanato. The first is from 2011. It's after the breakup of NRBQ. He talks about life working with his brother and life after NRBQ and songwriting and bass playing and all that stuff. And then 2007, an interview with Joey when he's still in NRBQ. So it's kind of interesting to hear the difference between those two interviews. This is a must for bass playing fans and NRBQ fans and just music fans in general. There's one more interview with Johnny Spompanato. If you want that one, go to wfmu.org/Michael. It's up there in the archives. Happy to hear from you. Email me, michaels@wfmu.org. And now, three interviews with the Spompanato Brothers.
There's Don't Tell Me from the Incredible Casuals. And Johnny Spompanato, welcome. I say welcome back to WFM. You've been on the show a few times, but always on the telephone, never in person. How are you?
I made it. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You made it. I know you have a gig tonight, that band, the Incredible Casuals, and they don't play as often as they used to, but they've got a big gig tonight in Orleans, Massachusetts. It's a long drive.
Yeah, it'll be easy. You know, we've done it a million times.
Yeah, you're the I-95 shuffle, sort of. How long have the Incredible Casuals been together, and how long have you been in that band?
Well, I joined in 81. I was like 24 at the time, and I moved to Cape Cod from Connecticut. They needed a fourth player, and, you know, mutual friends of NRBQ and known Chandler and Steve for a long time before that. So moved out to the Cape, and I never left.
Ah, so that's what brought you to the Cape, is the Incredible
Casuals.
Yeah, and you never left. You've raised a family there,
yeah.
And you've got a whole life up there. And you even got your brother, Joey, to go up there.
Yeah, he moved up from Nashville. We took him and his wife to the beach, out in the Outer Beach, and she said, Joey, we're selling the house, moving to the Cape.
It's a long way. I believe you went to high school in Queens, right?
I did, yeah, in Forest Hills.
That Cape Cod is a different world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is.
So you're a New Yorker, though.
I am.
Yeah. I mean, Cape Cod has changed, New York has changed, rock and roll has changed. It's a long time to be in the Casuals. You were in NRBQ for how many years?
Let's see. I joined in 94, beginning of 94.
And last gig?
It was like about 10 or 11 years or so, you know.
That's a long time to be in a band. And then Spompanato Brothers have now been a band for how long?
Yeah, we've been together now since NRBQ sort of, you know, changed. And we've been doing it since, what, about 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah.
Approximately.
I've seen you guys live. It's always a fun situation. You guys are working on a new record, and I know you brought some stuff we want to definitely hear from that as we go forward. The Incredible Casuals show tonight, I've seen the band live, and there's like a certain energy, kind of a party band, almost like the Kingsmen or something, mm-hmm. You know, or like a more contemporary version of that. It's not an anachronistic vibe to the band at all, but it's like you guys will play, you know, 5 sets until 2 a.m. until every last person is, you know, worn out. You know,
that's getting harder.
Yeah, well, for the audience too. You know,
yeah,
as
yeah.
I get older, I can't stay in the front, you know, and go nuts. I need to lean on something after a while.
It is great to see people over 40 slam dancing, though. You know,
yeah,
they still stay with it.
You guys. You've been playing every summer. You used to play every Sunday, but now you play at least some gigs every summer at a place called the Beachcomber, which is right on the beach in Cape Cod. It's just a great
It's a famous place.
For,
yeah.
It's a seafood clam shack kind of vibe. And you guys, how many years has the band been playing at the Beachcomber?
It's it was since since 1980, the year before me, and it was just a trio at the time.
So it's over 30 years?
Yeah, it's like 32 years or so, yeah.
Every summer at the same place. And that is just a sort of a tradition for Cape Codders, people vacationing on Cape Cod. It's a kind of a fun thing, and you usually only play in the summer. It's kind of like,
right.
And that place is only open in the summer.
Right,
think,
it shuts right down on Labor Day weekend.
All right, so the first gig maybe this year might be Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah,
and then
they should open at that time, but they were having a little trouble with erosion this year because the places, you know, the beaches are falling apart on the Cape because of the storms and everything. But, you know, I think they filled in what they could, and I think they're working on trying to be open in time.
Yeah. Well, folks can check out IncredibleCasuals.com and SpompanatoBrothers.com for information and gigs and all that stuff. And like I said, big gig tonight. I've driven from New York to see you guys on the Cape, so somebody might do that. And people are listening on the internet. Folks in the Massachusetts area, head out tonight. Your record, Pie in the Sky, is your you guys, the Spampinato Brothers' first full album. You guys are working on a new one. I mean, was it sort of, you know, you grew up next to your brother in the same house, listening to the same Beatle records, and then watching him go and enter, because I know he's a few years older than you, and finally, I mean, it's a long time to wait to get to make your first record together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it took a while, you know, and it's just, that's what it is. It is what it is. It took that long. Some things do, you know. It's just we all had things going on until the time we got together. And, you know, working with Joey has been great. You know, we're a fun team. We have a good time working together. We write songs together.
There's a great voice. And when two brothers sing, it's almost always just real special.
We always hear that. Yeah, it's always fun to get to do a song that will help feature that a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and you guys do. You seem to make the most of that, really feature that as much as you can. Tell me about, I mean, we were talking a little bit off the air about what a great songwriter your brother is. And he's also a real modest guy. I've had him on the show. You know, he's not going to honk his own horn so much. I mean, so now you must have some inkling. And I mean, how does he write songs? Does it take him forever? Do they pop out of him? Does he work hard? You know, what's
it like? I think maybe a little of all of that. You know, I think he has a lot of stuff, and he'll bring out what works for us at the time. You know, like we all would. You know, and he's got a lot of chords in his head. He's got a lot of melodies and a lot of chords, and he's you know, full of a lot of old style changes that fall into the new music, and it's what makes the product. You know?
I always say that guys like him who write with these fat chords and that are subtly different from just regular chords, they have to have just an amazing ear to kind of balance that melody, you know, to put the melody against these chords and make it, that's what makes it so rich, you know, and most people can't even hear the difference, you know, when they're writing a song. They're just, you know, like, you know, I don't think Bob Dylan has an ear like that. He's still an amazing songwriter, but it's just what some guys can do, and, you know, and Joey's melody. He's just he's one of everybody's favorite songwriters, and one of everybody's favorite bass players too. What a crazy bass player that guy is. I mean
it doesn't get much better than that at all, you know. I mean, we feel gifted that we got him. I always call him my secret weapon, you know.
He's great. You brought in the Japanese release of Pie in the Sky, which has two bonus tracks, which brings why do they get bonus tracks in America?
They always ask for extra stuff. They want to have something that you can't get anywhere else, and that makes some sense, you know.
I know that CDs cost a little more in Japan. I think they're kind of expensive.
Yeah.
So they want a reason why the kids don't buy the American CD, you know, import.
Right.
And so extra tracks kind of helps that. There's a great picture, a photo booth picture of you two.
Yeah.
When was that taken?
That was probably 73. I was probably like 14. You know, Joey's probably in his early 20s and stuff, and we were right in Forest Hills and Woolworth. And yeah, that was one of the few we took.
You know, there's on your guys' website, there's a quote. It says, "My two sons are the most beautiful creatures in the world." That's the authority, your mom, Teresa.
Yeah, you can't argue with that, right?
No, right. I just terrific. Like, you know, you could quote the press, but let's quote mom for a more definitive
That's
quote.
Right. She knows the most, right?
I'm not arguing with her. Mrs. Spampinato from the Bronx, I'm not going to argue with. Let's hear, you brought in, let's hear one of these bonus tracks from the Japanese issue. This is a tune called Don't Lose It that you wrote.
Yes.
Anything we need to know about this before we
Well, it used to be an old Casuals tune, and we wanted to re-record it as a Spampinato Brothers song, and it came out quite different, and we were trying to find places to go on it that we hadn't gone to before.
All right. Let's hear it. And, folks, it's Johnny Spampinato. He'll be back right after this. Some of the way
show, don't lose it. Don't lose it. Don't you tell she's fine when you got no time to prove it. She's okay. Don't lose it. Stop your playing around with the other clowns. You just tell that girl, go give her a whirl. Well, just the other day you said she's okay. So you better be ready when she runs away. Don't lose it. Maybe someday, in some other way, when it's gotta be known, and it's gotta be shown, don't lose it, don't lose it.
I hear a little Spampinato influence in that. You know, it's like you and your brother have a very similar vibe going on. Is it because your brother's a bass player that he changes chords a lot in his songs?
You know, we always talk about that. Like some of his idols, you know, people like Paul McCartney Motown bass player, is it Jameson? You know, people like that, you know, been a good influence on him to where, you know, he knows how to change, you know, chords and everything. But when it comes to bass playing, it's a different way of thinking than a guitar player. You know, guitar players that play bass just don't do it like a bass player. It's not the same, you know. And, you know, Joey just has a way about it that, you know, it's very warm sound. It sounds like an upright a lot of the time. You know, it's Joey, you know. And
yeah, he's an amazing bass player. My wife, who often in her non-music nerdness will say something profound, you know, because she's just reacting from the heart, you know. And one of the first NRBQ gigs we went to, she said, that guy seems like he's not counting, you know, like as if other bass players are always just going 1, 2, 3, 4, mm-hmm. you know. And I was like, that is so genius. Yeah, he's not attached to this.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, just being unconnected, but you're still with the program.
Oh, totally.
You know, and you're filling in the holes. And, you know, he has a lot of invisible notes that are for feeling. And, you know, it makes it the product.
Yeah, he's pushing, he's pulling. It's crazy. Yeah. Let's talk about Tom Arlino, drummer of NRBQ many years. He passed away. It's now been a couple of years or almost 2 years or so. Mm-hmm. Obviously, tragedy. I mean, just a guy who you and I were talking. You know, he played a lot of drums in his basement and then basically joined NRBQ when he was 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And that was his only job, you know.
Yeah.
Just what a loss. And everybody, you know, just a sweet. He was kind of a pussycat.
He was the nicest person. What I think a lot of people don't know about Tom is how he listened to music, not as much as how he played drums, which was my favorite drummer of all time. And I just feel so honored that I was able to play with him for that long, you know. But it's how he listened to music and how he gave 1,000% to the listening portion of the business, you know, of listening to something and really giving his whole in what he's going to hear.
That's really interesting.
And when you're playing him a tune, or if you have a song that he gets deeply into it, and it's something that you don't see in everybody. That was one trait of Tom's that we got to see because we were close to him. You know?
I'm sorry he didn't do more solo records. You know,
he was full of music. He was anything he picked up. You know, like we had our bit where he would pick up an acoustic guitar on stage and he would just noodle around with it, and music would just come out of it. Me and Joey would look at each other and go, "How did he do that?" You know, and
he played keyboards a little bit.
Yeah,
really
he knew how
cool
to noodle on everything,
and
everything he touched, it was always some musical thing would come out of it. It was magic.
Yeah, it seems like everybody misses that guy, and it's just
we miss him so much.
Just when you die young, it's just a shame. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's
just
a real shame
for everybody. Yeah, you know, on the message board, people are interested. You know, NRBQ still carries on, and there was some. There was a point where Terry Adams, the keyboard player of the band, changed his band's name to NRBQ, saying it's time to sort of keep the NRBQ name moving forward or something like that. And I'm sure, you know, you and Joey have both been on the show before and talked about that. That's just a tough moment. Is there anything folks listening need to know about that? I mean,
well, you know, there was just one story put out about it. And you know, there are, people should know there are more than one side to that story. And, you know, my brother has a really good reputation for being very truthful and honest. And, you know, we feel that it didn't go down the way people sort of see it as going down. Hmm. And that's really all I really want to say about it right now. I think that the full truth of the matter, and should I say on how everybody feels about all the other band members, that is, will probably eventually come out. And people will get to understand what really sort of happened, and they can put it together themselves.
All right. I will not push you, because I can. Okay. I don't. It's a tough situation. It's tough for the fans like me too, because you love everybody involved, and at the bottom line for me is the music. You know, that's really the bottom line. That's what we miss. We're talking about NRBQ. Let's talk about Big Al Anderson. You were never in the band with him, but you've gotten to play with him on many occasions, and it seems like lately more than ever. Mm-hmm. He's another guy who I describe as like a guy who got hit by guitar lightning or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. And has never been the same. What a phenomenon that guy is.
Yeah, he's a product of himself. I mean, he basically, in a way, almost became reborn, you know, as a writer, and he pushed himself in that way, and he got really successful doing it, you know. He has great tunes, he writes great stuff, and he's got a great formula, and a lot of people want to buy into it and get it, you know, so he's done very well.
Yeah, and just a monster of a musician.
He's an incredible guitar player, one of my idols, you know.
Great ear.
People know it by hearing me, so.
You have brought, and I'm so proud that you have brought some stuff that I assume no one in the world has heard on
no,
the radio.
No, not yet, no.
This is a forthcoming Spompinato Brothers record. It's going to be on vinyl, you're telling me, and also...
We're going to try to get it out in vinyl as well as the downloads and some CDs, so we'll have them in different forms, yeah.
And you think it'll be out in a month-ish or
so? I think
so?
It will, yeah. We're almost done with it, so I think it's coming.
And does the package have a name?
It does. It does. And the title of the CD, or should I say the title of the album,
or the
EP is called Smiles.
Smiles. All right. I like that. It's positive. We're going to hear a track called Tonto. And what do we need to know about this?
It's an instrumental. Joey wrote it. See what you think of it.
All right. Let's hear Tonto from the Spompinato Brothers here on the mighty WFMU. Thank you. All right, there's Tonto from Spampinato Brothers. And you tell me that your brother Joey plays a little guitar on that.
Yeah, he plays the melody on that.
Ah, that's kind of fun.
Joey can play guitar. He's very modest about it.
You don't see him too often play the guitar.
I push him sometimes. I go, Joey, you're going to do this part. And
all right, he needs to be pushed. Let's hear, I want to hear the other new song, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about this. What is this?
That's one of Aaron Spade's songs.
He's the other guitar player.
Yeah, we've been doing this live, and it's called Ghost in My Amp, and it's a rocker.
Yeah, another nice guy. It's nice to be in a band with nice guys.
He's like my little brother. I've known him since he was 15.
Wow, and you guys have a nice, you know, two-guitar rock.
Yeah, we play off each other, and you know, he's got a real more Stonesy kind of sound to his guitar playing, and it works well with mine, you know.
A ghost in my guitar?
Ghost in my amp.
Oh, in my amp in something.
There you go.
Ghost in my amp, new Spampinato Brothers from Smiles. That's a surprise ending. I did not hear it coming. Ghost of My Amp, new from the Spampinato Brothers. And Johnny Spampinato's here. It sounds great. It has a nice, big, kind of open, cool, live sound.
Yeah, sort of like Gene Krupa meets rock and roll, you know?
I mean, you have been in bands. Were you in bands in high school? I mean...
Yeah. I played in bands in high school and stuff. We did lots of cover material. I would have to learn, songs like from Santana and Chicago and stuff like that. And then I'd make everybody learn a couple of NRBQ songs or some old Chuck Berry thing or a Bo Diddley thing or something like that.
My high school had so many cover bands, playing The Doors or whatever. It's like, oh, my God, I'm going to kill myself. You brought along a bunch of CDs, and we're already, almost at the end. This is crazy. But you brought along this mixed CD that Tom Arlino made for you. He was kind of a famous mix. mixtape maker, you know, just kind of like a Pied Piper, Johnny Appleseed of music.
Yeah, and he would make you a personalized CD of things that he knew that you would like or things that you would like with him. And so he made a one for me that of a bunch of tunes that him and I always really, really liked together when we'd listen to him on the road and stuff like that. So that would be this collection.
And you picked a song for us to hear off this called Coco by Sandler and Young.
Yeah.
It's just one of your guys' favorites.
Yeah, you know, when I heard it, when Tommy put this on, I just cracked up, and I just think about him all the time when I hear this. I think good things.
All right, let's hear it and think good things. Thank you, Johnny. Hold on. Johnny, I'm not sure I even know how to react.
I know.
You've taken the show into a new dimension there. A little Sandler Young on the mighty WFMU. Tommy Ardolino made this mixtape for you, and just, it must be hard to just kind of go back, and you've still got this stuff. Did he make this drawing on the cover?
Yeah, he drew that too,
It's amazing.
Yeah.
He drew this?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. He should have been an illustrator.
He was. I mean, he did the cover for the children's record, You Nice People You Are.
Right.
He designed that. He was a good artist.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. I'm surprised. I mean, someone needs to make a book out of this stuff.
Yeah. I know.
I know that when this Spampinato Brothers record, Smiles, comes out, you guys will be playing a bunch, but right now you do have some shows in Massachusetts and Connecticut and New York booked, so if you live in those states, you might check out SpampinatoBrothers.com and see if they're coming to your town specifically. Do you want to hear another song off of this? Or?
Yeah. Why don't we play...
What do you got?
Why don't we play Toy for a Boy?
Toy for a Boy. All right, I will find it.
You got to drive fast and take chances sometimes, you know?
You talk to the audience. I will find Toy for a Boy.
All right, he's looking for Toy for a Boy, and I'll give you the weather report in the meantime. We've got a nice day outside. I think everybody's safe for the day. You can go out, have a pretzel.
A salty pretzel. All right, you bought her a salty pretzel. This is, the Ray Charles Singers, of course, from Tom Ardolino. To Johnny Spampinato, to you.
A bugle he can blow, a dog that knows. string, some silly little thing, just so it's something Daddy brought, his little heart will sing, sing for joy. Racing cars and rocket ships and model planes that fly, just look around and you will see a million things to buy.
You said it.
A toy for a boy.
That is, of course, the Ray Charles Singers here, and Johnny Spompanato has been my guest, sharing some brand new world premiere Spompanato Brothers tracks and some bonus tracks and some Tom Ardolino recommended tracks. Where is the next time people can see you live? Where and well, tonight they can see you up in Orleans, Massachusetts, the Jailhouse Tavern. What about
the Jailhouse Tavern? That's the Casuals, the Incredible Casuals, and then we got some Spompanato Brothers shows coming up on I think it's April 5th and 6th. We got the Bridge Street up in Collinsville, and we got the Narrows, which is in Fall River.
All right, folks. Like I said, SpompanatoBrothers.com to get the exact lowdown on all that stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, total pleasure. Come back anytime, and you still owe me. One day, you and Joey are going to sit
all
with
right.
two guitars and
you got it.
And make me sound, make...
This recording...
Oh, that's not right. Where am I? Well, we'll just leave it. let me think. I just don't want to let you go before I... All right, I guess that's it. Tonight, the Jailhouse Tavern, Orleans, Mass., Johnny Spompanato. Folks, stay tuned for Rex. You're tuned to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Nah, you can't really argue with logic like that. A bear is a bear is a bear. That's how I feel when I go for a nature walk. Yeah, he won't hurt you. Baloney. That is, of course, from Pie in the Sky, the brand new record from the Spompanato Brothers. And Joey Spompanato, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Howdy. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, you guys are out driving around, and it's like ice everywhere. It's crazy.
Well, where we are right now, it's just like a little sprinkling, but it's not bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, you're putting your life on the line to play rock and roll music. Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys have a gig tonight at the Turning Point, which is in Piermont, New York, 9 o'clock tonight. And I think there's still some tickets. Folks can go to turningpointcafe.com. It's a good place to see a show because it's like a teeny little basement room and all the seats you can see the stage and hear. And I think they still have food available. So it's kind of civilized.
Yeah, it's a pretty intimate setting there. It's kind of fun to play, too.
Yeah, you don't get a mosh pit or, you know, any... You're not going to get an elbow in the eye or any injuries.
Yeah.
So tell me about, your brother was on a few weeks ago talking about the new record, Pie in the Sky. It's a lot of fun. It's the first Spompanato Brothers record. It's the first...
I know. We're excited about it. You know, we always knew we were going to do it. Well, you know, it's an extension of NRBQ in a way. You know, we write songs, we record them, and that, you know, so it's the same kind of a thing, only it's like more of just our songs. We do a cover song here and there, but it's supposed to basically be, you know, j- just the two of us and our songs and things like that.
Yeah, and the brotherly harmony is sort of one thing that's impossible to fabricate or buy in a store, you know, and it's all through the record, which is a treat.
Yeah, and it is also like a band also, because we have Aaron Spade on guitar and Jay Conway. So it is a band, actually.
Yeah, and but, Aaron yeah. and Johnny have been playing together for years in the casual, and right. and that drummer is like from another planet, that guy. He plays, I mean, you can't watch him because you get confused, you know? Because it looks like what he's playing is a different song, but it sounds amazing.
Right, I'm going to tell him that. That's good. that's what Johnny used to say about Al's playing. When he'd watch Al play guitar, he said, "What? It doesn't look like he's changing chords," and he is.
Yeah, Al has those giant hands, too. Just a little, you know, it's like giant bear hands on the guitar, yeah. Let's talk about, people always mention you when they're mentioning great rock and roll bass players. Do you think of yourself as a great rock and roll bass player? You can be honest.
Well, you know, I think I do all right. You're always judged by people around you and not by yourself. You know, I think
sure.
myself as a songwriter and singer, performer, and I play bass while I do it. You know, I think of it that way.
What is going on over there? What's the secret to being a good bass player? What do you think it is?
Don't overplay. Don't play everything you know all the time.
Mm.
Sometimes the simplest thing is to play the root of the chord. Sometimes that's the very best thing, and sometimes not. But you just have to know when.
So just being born with the magic of knowing is the secret, I guess. You told a story last time about Paul McCartney. You went over to Paul McCartney's house, and you guys were having a little jam session, in his basement or his garage or whatever, and he sort of went up to you when you were playing the bass and said, how do you do that?
Oh, yeah, he did. Actually, towards the end of the we were having kind of a rehearsal for him. He just wanted to play, and I happened to be in town, so I was there. I think he was looking at the way I play with my thumb and dampen the strings with my side of my hand. He was looking at the way I was doing that because we were playing sort of a rockabilly thing. And so he said, "So what are you doing there?" So he's asking me. So it was kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, give Paul McCartney.
My idol asking me how I'm playing bass.
Yeah, it is a kind of a surreal moment. What other bass players are good besides you and Paul McCartney?
Hmm?
What other bass players do you like besides Paul McCartney?
Oh, there's so many. I couldn't. Right now you're hearing our GPS talking to us.
Oh, okay. I was wondering who that girl was.
Yeah. Well, there's so many bass players that I think are really, really great. I couldn't really go into it. I mean, if I said James Jameson, well, okay, everybody else thinks he's the best. He's the best, you know, the Motown bass player, that style.
Yeah, he's great. You know?
But I mean, how many jazz players can you name that are great players? I mean, I'd have a long list here. I couldn't even do it.
All right. Well, James Jameson is a perfect example. I mean, he's so good. You know, it's okay that he's on everybody's list because
he was such a different kind of a player. He bounced around in a certain way. Everything seemed like, with those records, everything was based around the bass. Everything, you know, it's like that was the focal point of everything.
Yeah, the guitars are not the main thing, which is such a rock and roll thing, you know.
Yeah.
Let's talk about writing songs. You're a songwriter, performer. Is there a favorite song you've ever written, something you're proud of?
Well, you know, I always think that the latest song I'm writing is my best song I ever wrote. So, I don't know. I think off of this latest record, I think is one that me and Johnny wrote together, Girl in My Dream. I think that's my favorite on the record right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think because it was the last one we worked on to get it finished.
So what happens? One of you comes up with part of a song and you show it to the other one. You say, "Hey, brother, can you help
yeah.
me? Can you help me out here?" And
that's always the way it usually is. I never really sit down with anybody, so to say, and say, "Okay, let's play a few chords and try to write a song. I don't ever do anything like that. That's too, it's too private. It's like taking your pants down instead of in public. I always think it's a better thing. If somebody has a hunk of some idea, show it to you, and I will learn it and then take it home and trash it around and come up with something.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. Some people, like Big Al, just had the ability to sort of go in a room with some guys and, you know, write songs. Maybe it's because they were writing songs that really weren't for them. They were writing these sort of abstract hit songs, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a talent in doing that also. Mm. You know, I think that the whole thing with the co-writing thing, say in Nashville, country songs or something, they figure if they put two people together, it'll finish a whole lot of songs that one person wouldn't finish. That kind of thing, you know, so...
Yeah, it's also sort of quantity, not quality sometimes, you know, just
yeah.
Gotta...
Well, it's always a compromise if it's, you know, two people that, you know, are not, like, in a way, marriage, you know, marriage kind of co-writers, you know.
Did you ever in your life think... I should have, you know, gone to medical school or should have done something else ever?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think I really don't know what I'd be good at. You know, some kind of math thing, probably. I think that's the only way I could have, like, been enjoying some. But maybe math is kind of, like, related to music in a way. I think maybe that's the only way I could feel like I'm doing something.
That's very interesting because my wife, who is I always am interested in her opinions when we see music because she's not a music nerd like I am. So her opinions are more fresh, you know. And after she saw NMBQ, you know, years ago for the first time, and she said, you know, it seems like that bass player up there is not counting when he's playing the bass, and so many other bass players seem like they're just counting the whole time. And I thought that was kind of the genius secret of Joey Spampinato's bass playing style. And here you are talking all about math, so it's interesting.
Well, yeah, I guess it's related somehow. I'm not sure, but I'd have to think about that.
I'd have to think about it, too. Again, the Turning Point Cafe is an intimate little spot in Piermont, New York, and the show is 9 o'clock tonight. I've seen the band a couple times, and it's a lot of fun, a lot of originals, a lot of covers, some old NRBQ songs, a lot of singing. Sometimes everybody on stage is singing. You even let Aaron take a lead on a few songs. What can the folks expect?
Well, they can expect, if they picked up our new record, they can expect to hear some of the songs from it. And that's, you know, that kind of like freshens up some of the old stuff, if you follow. You know, I think people like, a lot of people like to hear a lot of the old stuff. That's one thing. But I think it's always lightens everything up and freshens it up when you have new material, so... That's what we're doing.
Yeah. I assume you still love playing live music.
Oh, of course. I think anybody that you know needs a response, an instant response from people. You know, instead of just making a record and sending it out there, you know, you don't really know what how people are feeling or thinking while you know while they listen to it. But when you're playing this stuff live, You get instant feedback. You see if people are picking up on what you were trying to do, or say, oh, well, maybe they think of this in a different way than I was thinking when I was writing it. Or, you know, you get the instant feedback. You know.
Yeah. Will you be selling copies of Pie in the Sky at the show tonight?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we'll have that. We'll have shirts. You know, who doesn't?
You got to have that. The first NRBQ record, I think, is 1968, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
You guys have been on Columbia, Mercury, Bearsville, Rounder, a bunch of labels. And here you guys are putting out this record yourself. Things have changed in the record business so much. I mean, it's just kind of mind-boggling. Are you guys feeling like you found a way to sort of get the word out on this record and get people knowing about it? It seems like a lot of people I'm talking to having trouble.
Yeah, I think we're learning all the time. There are a lot of people that have a better handle on it because they've been doing this indie thing and independent type of releases, and they know exactly what to do. And we're kind of like in the learning process of what is the best thing to do with this online and blah, 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 you know, that. So, you know, we're getting a handle on it now, starting to.
Yeah. Before we go, just tell me, what do you like to do to relax? What is your day like? What do you do every day? Wake up in the morning?
I do the same thing as everybody does, you know. I might get up, have some, make a pot of coffee, and go online and just, like, erase emails.
Right. The same as
everybody.
That would
be the first thing I do. And then you get serious and do something, you know.
Write some songs?
Yeah, try to, or, you know, at least try to once a day.
Are you a good cook?
Sort of. If it's not too, it's not your recipes or anything.
Do you write on bass? Do you write on the piano, on the guitar?
On guitar.
Always on guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Once again, the band is fun. It's a rock and roll band. The new record is great. It's called Pie in the Sky, and the place is called the Turning Point Cafe, and it's in Piermont, which is kind of in the shadow of what's that big bridge right there?
The Tappan Zee Bridge.
Right, sort of right near the Tappan Zee Bridge. So if you live on the other side of the bridge, it's like only a few minutes away. And if you live in New Jersey, it's really only a few minutes north.
So if you see the word Nyack, you're close.
Right, it's right near Nyack. And like I said, it's a great place to see your show because you can kind of hear and see. I think it's a little bit sort of like a miniature Bottom Line, if anyone used to go to the old Bottom Line.
Yeah, only we're not really on a stage. We're kind of like almost on the floor, and there are tables. You can get right in front of us, and it's like, it's really intimate. You know, it's almost too intimate for me.
Really?
No, it is fun. No, but you have people really just right in your face, so it's like, it can be uncomfortable. You're not feeling good looking that day.
But don't touch the band. Don't reach across the line. I mean, NRBQ has some very, obsessive fans. They've got, there's a lot of, some bands just kind of attract fans that are and very intense is a good way to put it, I think. I guess that could be tough to handle from a performer's point of view.
Well, I think, you know, people always said that we were a cult kind of following.
Hmm.
And which is good because, if you're not playing in stadiums, then you should have, some rabid fans that really, really like you and, that kind of thing. If you just have casual fans, then it's not good for a following. You just have a walk-up crowd,
Yeah. What is coming up? Is there another Spompinato Brothers record? Do you have more songs? Is there any side projects? What else is going on?
Well, let's see. I sometimes my wife has a little jazz trio, and she's a great writer too, Kami Lyle.
Right.
And I play with her. And
she plays the trumpet, right?
What?
She plays the trumpet.
Yeah, she plays trumpet and piano. Writes songs. She's a great writer. And I do that sometimes when I'm playing on the Cape, and sometimes we go off Cape and play the place. So actually, we played at the Joe's Pub in New York, and places like that.
Hmm. Anything else? Any other?
Let's see. We play in a little rock and roll band called the Rip It Ups on Cape Cod. We play like once a month at a special club that we always play at, and that's fun because like eight people on the stage at one time. There's like three guitars. It's like a nutty kind of like big jammy kind of thing.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. Who else?
Oh, it's fun because they're all good players.
Who else is in the Rip It Ups?
Well, one of the guitar players is also one of the guitar player that plays with me and Kami and her band.
Hmm.
Johnny plays in it. Gary Locke, who's he's our engineer when we go play in the studio. Jody Burchill. Singer, Kami Lyle plays in a trumpet. There's two trumpets in the band, and I think I've probably left out a couple of people.
Crazy.
Let's see, Liam Hogg, who's playing with us right now. So, you know, it's all inbreeders on the Cape. Everybody plays this, that, the other, yeah.
Right. I got to ask you, I mean, this is like the Paul McCartney question, but will NRBQ ever get back together, and should NRBQ ever get back together?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's possible because, you know, you have reunions. People have reunions, and they get together, have a little rehearsal, run over the old material, and it should happen probably, and maybe it probably will. I mean, why not? But at the moment, I don't know. We haven't talked about anything like that, so there's no big plan. There probably should have been a 40th anniversary that just went by, but it didn't pan out.
Hmm.
So I guess there has to be some sort of milestone for it, I think. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm not going to say no, because, you know, you can't do that. You could end up being a liar.
Yes, yeah, yes, that makes sense. Never say never. Is there a lot of NRBQ material good NRBQ material that has never been released, or is everything out there pretty much? When you guys were making a record, are you the kind of band that recorded a lot more songs than you needed?
Yeah, we usually did, and there always were things hanging around on the sides that either didn't get finished or other, you know, other things had priority. Or always seem to have priority when you're putting out records. Unless you're putting out lots and lots and lots of records, you know, then you can include everything. Everything gets out. But, you know, we only put one out every so often. So whatever what we thought was the priority songs, they'd get on the record. And the ones that sat around from last time, if they didn't all of a sudden rise to the top, then they still continue. Because I know that there are things around probably.
Yeah, I hope I'd love to hear them. Let me put one vote, one order in for those.
Yeah, eventually everything comes out, right?
I hope so. Well, Joey, I want to let you get back on the road. You're headed towards the Turning Point Cafe in Piermont. And folks can go to turningpointcafe.com and pick up a ticket now, which you should probably do. And you can sit down there and you can get dinner, watch the band, get some drinks, get some dessert. And like Joey said, it's intimate. You are right there, you know.
Yeah.
You could.
It's definitely a fun place. I think if you haven't been there before, I think you'll enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I agree you will. And one of these days, I want you and your brother Johnny to get here and here with your acoustic guitars and sing some songs for the people.
We'll do that.
One of these days. The record's called Pie in the Sky, and if you can't, you know, people listen all around the world to this program. Pick up a copy of that new Spampinato Brothers CD. I've got a track from it queued up. It's that Steve Ferguson track.
Oh, yeah. We have a nice video of it on our website at SpampinatoBrothers.com.
Yeah, there's beautiful...
As soon as you open it up, it opens up and starts playing with the video. It's kind of fun.
It's a little bit like the Brady Bunch. You know, there's like a bunch of squares and there's different
things. There you go. Yeah, I didn't think of it. That's right. You're right.
Yeah. Well, have a great gig tonight, and please drive yourself safely.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Joey.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Joey Spampinato, welcome to WFMU. How are you?
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm psyched to have you here. NRBQ, one of my all-time favorite bands.
Thank you.
I know the band is taking a break right now. What are you doing? What are you up to?
Well, I'm living on Cape Cod. My brother lives here, too. He's lived here for many years. And me and my wife are enjoying it.
I guess after almost 40 years of playing a lot of one-night stands a year, it's nice to take a little break.
Yeah. But we're actually not breaking. Kami Lyle, who my wife, she's a great songwriter and singer and player, plays trumpet, piano. Anyway, I've been playing with her, and it's been, like, a lot of fun.
Tell me a little bit about, you were born in New York City in the Bronx, is that right?
Uh-huh.
What kind of a childhood did you have?
You know, we always thought it was a great childhood, and after you move away from an area and you come back, you say, well, you know, it was kind of rougher than we thought it was. But, you know, at the time, you don't think it.
What did you have a lot of 45s in your house? Did your parents listen to music? Were they listening to...
Well, my father played guitar, and we always had music in the house. He was a big Django Reinhardt fan. He played guitar in that style, and we always had big band music in the house.
And what about the radio? What was New York City radio like?
It was all over the map. At the time, if you can remember this, anything could be a hit. In the early 60s.
Sure, you could have Andy Williams and the Kingsmen back-to-back.
And they're singing none, too. And anything in the world could be a hit played right next to anything else.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was greatest. You know, it's really you never knew what was going to be a hit. You know, after that, it just became, everything was separated out. And, I don't know, not as much fun, I don't think, but...
Agreed. Growing up on the streets of the Bronx, was there lots of music around?
What I was doing earlier on was singing in like hallway singing groups, like doo-wop kind of things. But not, you wouldn't say doo-wop really. I mean, they call it that now. But you know, it was just like a cappella singing in the hallways. Anyway, that's what I did like from when I was 12 or 13 on, and then eventually we picked up instruments. You know, after the Beatles came out. You had to back yourself up. It was just you had to. So I started playing bass. A couple other guys played guitar and piano and stuff. And we, you know, became a group called The Seven of Us, which we recorded a couple of 45s for Redbird Records.
How did you get hooked up with Redbird? It was an interesting little label.
You know, our manager was one of a duo team. It was like Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, only a later version. One was a singer. His name was Rossi.
Alan Rossi.
Yeah, you know, I've forgotten now. But anyway, it was the singer. He was our manager. This is a crazy old story.
And he got you signed to Redbird.
Yeah, we had a Redbird recording contract, and we recorded a couple of singles, but nothing happened with it, and so we eventually collided with Terry's group in Florida, when we were playing in Florida, and so that became the nucleus of NRBQ.
So you run into Terry Adams. What was your first thought when you saw him?
Well, you know, I kind of thought that he was somebody like very much like myself in a different way, but I had been playing with in the band I was, where everybody wasn't quite thinking the same way, you know, weren't really on the same page. We just had things in common, but weren't really striving for the same thing. So I think he was the first person who I thought we were trying to do something similar.
And can you define it? What it is you were trying to do even at that young an age, or did you just know it was different?
Well, I think maybe it was because I was such a big Beatle fan at that time, and he was such a big Stones fan, that we kind of like worked together. It's kind of like our goal to have a band that was on sort of like on this level, or if you want to call it that, you know, we were striving to be in a band like that, you know. And so what I was in at the time wasn't that, and so I think that we started thinking in those terms.
So it's interesting because you talk about the broad reach of radio and sort of a broad influence of music, and that is sort of what NRBQ really was known for, so many different kinds of music, including songwriting, but yet there was still an NRBQ sound to everything.
Well, I mean, that's what you always strive for. I mean, there's even somebody like the Beatles or the Stones, they at the time, you know, I'm talking about that, what we were at the time, and they had all kinds of influences, but yet, you know, they were copying this and that, really. but yet they had their own stamp on it.
Yeah, right.
And that's what kind of like we strive for, you know.
Yeah, definitely without those early, you know, those first Rolling Stone records are mostly all just covers, but
yeah,
it still sounds like the Rolling Stones. Yeah.
Right.
It took them a little while to figure out, you know, try to write songs as good as the Beatles.
Well, actually, they did a pretty good job there. I think they did better even in those times than they did later.
The band ends up moving to New York, NRBQ, and gets signed to Columbia Records.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I asked Terry the same question when we spoke with him a few months ago. Was that a sort of a mind-blowing thing? Here we are, these bunch of hippie guys, and we're going to get signed to the oldest record company in America?
Not to us. I mean, we kind of thought that that's what we were supposed to do.
Right.
You know, it's like
signed to the giant label and start having some
hits.
It
was kind of like fate to us, you know.
And the first record cut entirely live, right?
Yeah.
And then the next record, you get to make a record with Carl Perkins. I guess that wasn't exactly your idea.
Well, it wasn't our idea, but we jumped on it because, you know, that was like a big influence, you know. All the great guys from the 50s, they were, if you weren't influenced by them, I don't know, you know. I think, you know, Chuck Berry and people like that, Jerry Lee Lewis and stuff. If you were in a rock and roll band and you didn't know much about these things, well, then I don't know what to think about that, you know?
Yeah, you missed the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the Bop and the Blues record, it's a real interesting record. I mean, I love that record. There's some great NRBQ songs, some great Carl Perkins songs,
right,
and some stuff you do together. 1970 is the year, and I guess, you know, Carl was kind of looking for a new direction, and it's a great record because it shows why sometimes you got to hear a band do a cover tune to figure out what the band is about, you know, because you see you guys just kind of put this NRBQ stamp on the music, and it's so different from the original way Carl played it, yet it's very reverent and very fresh and very interesting.
Well, you know, you try to keep the old flavor of it and not lose it, and yet add something to it of your own, you know, so I think that's basically what it is.
Let's talk about the bass technique. You're known for being an unusual bass player, and people try to copy your style. It's this very mysterious thing. What is it?
Well, it's very mysterious. I don't know.
Is it top secret?
Even to me, it's mysterious, but
it's just what you hear?
I don't know. You just have a sound in your head, and you try to duplicate what that sound is, you know, so you're in a way, you're adapting to what you hear, what you want to hear. Maybe that's it, you know. So when you pluck the string, or hit, you know, or pick the string, you're waiting for the sound that you want to hear. And if it's not it, then you adjust and you get it in any way you can. So a lot of times I'll play with my thumb. And I will, I started playing with my fingers, that style of playing.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel like I could control it as well as the other way, where I dampen the strings with the kind of side of my hand, the edge of my hand, as I'm playing with my thumb. And then you can control how long the notes are going to be by dampening it. And so you can get a rounder sound, you can get maybe an upright bass feel or sound, not exactly, but closer.
It must be nice to have folks sort of, you know, you're written about in bass player magazines, and folks are sort of always trying to figure that out. I mean, that's a nice legacy to leave.
Well, that's nice. That's a compliment.
That's one of the things about NRBQ. Every guy in that band pretty much played their instrument, did their thing in their own way. You know, I mean, nobody plays the drums like Tom.
No.
And nobody plays.
I like to kid him. It's like throwing a locker down a flight of stairs.
But right on time.
Yeah.
And swinging. Nobody plays the clavinet at all. Forget about plays it like Terry. You know.
I know he took that instrument and made it his own.
Yeah, he really did. In fact, when I first heard NRBQ records, I didn't know there was a clavinet. I just thought it was a bunch of guitars.
Well, he had a way of playing it so that. When he would, if you want to call it strum, maybe we'd call it strum. He would play it in such a way where it was sort of guitarish. Hmm. You know? If it, you know, he wanted to do that, he would get that thing.
So, very rhythmic, yeah.
Yeah, very rhythmic, right.
So tell me, you didn't, in the early days of the band, you weren't writing that many songs, a couple great number one hits, but later in the band, you really started to write a lot of songs. Where did that come from? Do you write them on guitar? Do you write them on bass, piano?
I write them on guitar.
And does it lyrics first or melody first? Or
You know, with our band, it seemed like, me and Terry, it seems like we always thought music first. I think I can speak with him as far as that goes. Well, sometimes he'd have a, well, I can't speak for him, I really can't, but it seemed like he was more music first or cared about that first, and I think I did too. Maybe, because I didn't feature myself as a lyricist too much, I would write music and then try to write some lyrics that would go with it later.
Mm.
So it became a difficult thing because you had some set in stone piece of music, and then you had to jam the English language into it.
Right. Well, you do a great job. I mean, some of this, and it's not just me saying so. Lots of folks have covered Joey Spampinato songs, you know, which is must also be a nice feeling. Tell me, I'm going to just name a few songs. Tell me what you think about them. Still in School.
Besides being a big Beatle fan, before that, I was a big Everly Brothers fan. Mm. And so, and you know, that's not a far stretch between the two, you know. And I think that when you in a certain mood, you know, I don't sit down to do something. You know, I'll start to write, and then whatever feeling I get, I'll go in that direction. So with a song like that, and happens a lot, actually, when I get that kind of a feeling, I'll go down that road. And I'd have to say that was Joey Everly, you know?
Just, yeah, it'd be a perfect song for them to do.
Yeah.
You Can't Hide is a crazy song. Starts with that bass figure, and it's a song you guys have recorded twice.
Right. Well, it was the first song I ever recorded with the band. It was on our first record, and you know, and I wasn't really writing a lot back then. Steve Ferguson was still in the band, and Terry and him seemed like they dominated the direction at the time of the band, and so I just came up with that song. I don't know what I was thinking about.
Is it an anti-makeup song?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that's just
a metaphor for life?
I guess so, yes.
Without getting too deep. I Love Her.
There you go, a metaphor. That's a very good word.
Thank you very much. Is there a song that you're real proud of, something that you just worked on forever and ever, and when it finally came out, you were happy with it?
You know, I don't usually take a... well, you know what? I'll tell you what happens. I'll write a piece of music, and sometimes I'll write some lyrics to it, and sometimes I won't. But then when we're ready to go in the studio, I take what's the ones that I'm hot on at the time, and I'll finish them right up, and we'll record them. So basically, most of my songs get finished right before we record.
That's very interesting. So it's, you sort of need that little added pressure of the
That's it. I always thought that under pressure, I work good like that. So
the band has a fierce reputation as a live band. I mean, everyone who's seen the band loves them, and the only people that aren't NRBQ fans are folks that haven't heard them or haven't seen them yet. Did the band rehearse? Did you just go out there and do it?
The only time we ever rehearsed was an actual new tune that somebody wrote.
So that
would require a rehearsal for everybody to get on the same page, chord changes. But
and that would be during a sound check, or you would
no, that would actually be a rehearsal for a song somebody wrote.
Okay,
because then obviously it's not in the air, no one's heard it before, so you know that kind of thing. So I think that with our own songs, we would take more time to learn them, and with other things that have been in the world, we would take less time and no rehearsal for those type of things.
Interesting. Yeah, Terry Adams didn't work with his set list. The band didn't work with the set list. Terry would just sort of call off a song. Was that, that was a little bit like being on a trapeze, I would imagine.
Well, it seemed to work best for us. He was very sensitive about what we played from song to song during the course of a night, because he was always very in tune with the response from the audience or what the audience needed or at that moment. So I think that he was more in tune with that than anybody else. So we just said, okay, call it as you hear it, and it made for less chaos, too, on stage.
Let's talk about Lou Albano for a minute. I can't talk to you and not talk about Captain Lou, a larger-than-life figure.
Oh, yeah. He's a genius. He's a genius.
He's a genius.
You realize that after you're with him in the studio and you're around him, he actually knows about a lot of things, and he can pull them out of his hat instantaneously. He can pull them right into a spiel he's doing. He's amazing.
Yeah, amazing guy. When he first heard the Captain Lou song, was he totally charmed?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
It's a classic song.
Yeah, he's something. I remember the first time we saw him was on New York City Street. We were actually seeing one of his wrestling team guys that he had. He was manager of them. And they were in a restaurant, and he came out on the sidewalk, and like he was like, one of his shirt was open, and like he was yelling something. He was and turning around in a circle, and when he came around and was facing you in your direction, it was the loudest voice you ever heard, and then it was insane.
Let's talk about folks that besides NRBQ that you've played with. One of the great projects you worked on was Johnny Johnson's solo record, Johnny B. Bad. Let's talk about that. It's a great record.
He's a great piano player, played with Chuck Berry. And that's actually where I met him and played with him first, was I worked on that movie about Chuck Berry.
Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that first, then. Let's talk about Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll. How did Keith Richards was putting the band together. How did he pick you? How did he...
Well, he was also putting it together with Steve Jordan, the drummer.
Mm-hmm.
They were working together and putting together this band. And NRBQ was playing at the Bottom Line that very week. And I said, the two of them came to see the band. And so after we played, he came backstage and offered me the...
Just like that. Is Keith Richards a fan, or were they just like, let's go see this great band, or were they...
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think he'd been aware of this, because I know that they recorded up in Bearsville, New York, and we lived up in that area and recorded at the same place. So I know that they were aware of us, but I didn't know about how much, you know.
So, of course, you said, yes, I will do this project. And it was Chuck Berry's birthday, and I think the DVD has just come out with a 4-DVD set. There's all kinds of extra bonus stuff. Tell me.
Well, somebody gave it to me, and I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
What was the whole... I mean, Chuck Berry is a notorious nutty guy. He is like one of the greatest songwriters ever.
Yeah, exactly.
And what was it like working with him? I mean, and in the film, they show him being nutty, so it's not like, you know, it's a secret or anything.
Well, no, I think he's got a reputation, and he can live up to it, and then he could also show you a different side, too, Don. So I think he was said as an enigma, you know?
Mm.
And but anyway, I had actually a good time. I wasn't, me and Steve Jordan as the rhythm section, we weren't out there like with the what we call the stars, that doing different songs and that kind of thing. So we could actually enjoy the whole thing in the background.
Mm. On that project, Steve really figured out how to do that drum thing and make it sound like those records and have that feel of not, you know, records made after a certain point, the drums seem to sort of overtake the record. But on those Chuck Berry records, they're really the rhythm section, you know. And you and Steve really figure that out well, which is...
Oh, Steve's a great drummer.
Yeah, he's an amazing musician, yeah. And so was Chuck Berry real happy to have you guys? Because he's sort of legendary for playing with whoever the promoter would provide, just any local band to back him up. And sometimes his shows would be great, and sometimes they would be, you know, sound more like a garage band or whatever. Was he thrilled? Did he appreciate how good you guys were?
Well, I hope he did. He sounded like he was. I mean, he acted like he was, appreciated it, you know, because, you know, people were doing this for him, you know, and so they wanted something good to happen for him and make this all happen. And so I think he appreciated that fact, you know, but he's Chuck Berry, and he's going to be Chuck Berry under any circumstances, you know.
I mean, did he give you a hug? Did he send you a Christmas card?
Well, I didn't... not a Christmas card. Well, let me put it this way. Steve and Keith said at some time during this thing, Chuck is going to have to show you, give you a lesson or show you what you're doing wrong and show you how to do it. And so it was. I said, okay, well, so I was prepared for that, you know. And so at one point in the rehearsal, obviously he had changed songs over the years. the way he played them and things.
Right.
And so I was playing a song in the style of way it was recorded, a certain bass line that happened in a I forget which song it was now, but it had a certain thing to it and gave it the character of the song. And so I was playing back that, and he says he was questioned it, and that kind of thing. And so at that point I said, okay, here's my lesson. So he was pointing that out about how the song went, and I said, well, I'm just playing it like I had learned it, you know, I heard it before. And so that was the end of that. So the next morning he comes in, and you know, we're waiting for him, we're rehearsing. He comes in and he says, bass player, you were right. He didn't call me by my name. I was a bass player. You were right. And so he went back and listened to the record and saw that what I was doing was right. And so it was I really liked that. It was Chuck doesn't normally say he was wrong about something.
Right.
And so I took it as a great thing.
Yeah, that's a high compliment, I think, from Chuck Berry. Sure. So from that, you end up working with Johnny Johnson on that record. Tell me a little bit about Johnny, because, again, he's a figure who didn't sort of get the limelight till late in his life.
He was the sweetest guy you ever want to meet. I tell you, he was not confrontational. He appreciated everything around him. He genuinely it sounded like he always felt like he was like in a good mood and really a beautiful person.
Hmm.
You know, when I'd go stand next to him when I was playing, you know. And it was really sweet, you know. He would call me his baby. He would say, "My baby, come over here," because I would whatever he wanted to, you know, play on piano, I would just back him up and just stay right with him, you know, that kind of thing. So I had a good relationship with him.
Mm. That's very sweet. How good do you think he was?
He was fantastic. Fantastic. I mean, you're
kind of a one of a kind.
You know, you hear that kind of style of piano playing, and you know, when somebody makes it look easy, you don't think about it.
Mm.
But if they're doing it right, maybe that's what you're supposed to hear it, and it does, you know, it does its thing. But if you really think about it, it's a very difficult thing to do. And he was really one of the greats about it.
You've got a lot of famous fans, and you cross paths with a lot of famous people. Tell me about playing bass with Paul McCartney. How did that happen?
Well, that was sort of an accident, in a way. I guess nothing's an accident, right? Well, I was playing. I was in England. Well, let me back up a little bit. We had met Paul, and he said, "Well, if you're ever in England, look me up." And so I happened to be there when doing the Eric Clapton 24 days thing, where I was playing on six nights of it, doing the blues portion.
Mm.
And so I was there for that week, and so I got in touch with Wicks, who was his piano player at the time.
Right.
And so he had told me that they were having a rehearsal. Paul just wanted to play, and the bass player, who was
Hamish Stewart.
Hamish Stewart.
Right.
Hamish Stewart. He was in California. I think he lived there, and so he wasn't in England. And so there was my shot right there. They invited me out there to just play for the afternoon. And so he sent the car out from London out to the country, about a two-hour ride or so, and went out to the what they call the mill, where he plays and rehearses and records stuff. And so I got to play with Paul for about two, three hours.
And you just played bass in front of Paul McCartney? That must have been tough.
It was a tough one, I tell you. It was it was one of those things where you might say he was my childhood idol, you know?
Yeah.
And so there it was. You're there live with a cartoon.
Right. Was it so much fun?
It was. I was on cloud nine.
Yeah.
I have to say it was. I was a foot off the ground for at least a couple of days.
And did you just play old rock and roll songs? And
well, we were playing a lot of the stuff he was doing on tour.
Huh.
So there was a few Beatles songs in there and some other things, some old rock and roll songs and that kind of thing.
What a riot.
Yeah, so he played guitar and he played drums some. So it was just, he just wanted to play and just knock around. So that was what it was.
Amazing. When Bill Wyman quit the Stones, there was some talk that you, Joey Spampinato, would replace him in the Stones. How far? Was that just talk, or was that a real thing?
Well, it was a real thing with Keith and with Ron. So he wanted to know if I would be interested in it. Keith did. And so I said, well, sure. You know, I knew I was playing with NRBQ, but I also knew that the Stones do a tour, and then they go off the tour, you know.
Right.
And for, you know, quite a while, so I thought there was a possibility of, you know, touring, because I didn't know really if there was going to be a new Rolling Stone. As it turns out, there wasn't. So I think they were looking for someone to tour.
Not really join the band. And did you rehearse? Did you meet them? Did you guys play
together?
Well,
what I did was I after I had spoken with them and said I was interested in it, then I got this notice. They said that they were going to have tryouts, auditions. That's it, auditions. So right there, I thought, oh, God, it's going to be a blue million guys going down there, and girls, huh, as it turned out, too. So I went down to New York City, and what happens is, Dale, you're in some green room, and then you walk into this rehearsal studio in New York City, and you play several songs with the Rolling Stones. So it was all of them and me.
Was it fun or was it
nervous? Oh, yeah, it was a gas.
Well, that's good. The NRBQ's taking a break or it's over. No one seems to be exactly sure. Are you ever going to make a solo record?
A solo record, yeah. I think, well, it'll either be a solo record or I'll do something with my brother John.
Ah, right. Johnny, who joined the band, you know, a long time ago at this point. So you guys would do a record together. That would be great.
Yeah, we're thinking about doing it actually before the year is out. We're going to start it.
And you got some songs ready to go?
Yeah.
So you're playing some gigs coming up with your wife, Cammy. We talked about her earlier, and that's a different kind of thing for you. She's kind of, it's like a jazzy, sort of almost like a Nora Jones type of thing.
Well, you could, a side of her is like that,
yeah.
You know, because she's a trumpet player and a piano player. She writes songs. She doesn't just do jazz. She writes pop songs.
Yeah.
She writes, it floats between the two somewhere. She sometimes plays trumpet with a big band.
So between working with her and writing some songs and stuff, are you keeping busy enough, or are you itching to get back? And
well, I think that basically her thing is just, in a way, still sleeping. We're trying to get some more action on what she does, you know, and recognition, because I think she's actually my favorite songwriter.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to say. I mean, she writes lyrics like no one else that I know of, and the music is up on a level where I can play it and be really satisfied. It's really good. I learned a lot of that songwriting from her, actually.
Really? That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Lyric writing.
Well, we sort of got to wrap this up. I hate to say it. I want to end this with the song Sail On, Sail On,
uh-huh,
which is one of my all-time favorite songs. It's just and a great record, too. The recording of it is perfect. It must be satisfying when you sort of, you know, sit in your kitchen or your living room and you write a song on the guitar and you bring it in and it becomes a finished thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, can you tell me just a little bit about the making of that record or the writing of that song?
Okay. Yeah. The song itself came... I had written the music to it and wasn't sure exactly what it was about. I just knew the feeling of what was about, but didn't actually put it into words. And me and Cammy, before we got married, we were on again, off again, breaking up. And this was like kind of like maybe a major breakup for us before we actually figured out that we were going to get married. And I think that is what song came out of it in our breakup.
Hmm.
And so maybe that's why it was a good one.
Why do you think people are so crazy about NRBQ? What is it?
Well, you know, when you're in it, you're not quite sure. You know, we always like to think that maybe whatever it is we do, they can't get anybody else. We're goofballs, and yet we're serious. We take what we do serious, but we don't take ourselves serious. I don't know what else to say about it.
That's perfect. That's a perfect answer. I think you're right. Well, Joey Spampinato, thank you for visiting with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.